Life has its ups and downs, and like many of us, I face moments with depression. Music has always helped me find my way through, and I believe it can do the same thing for you. I'm James Cox, and this is the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast, a podcast about the healing power of music.
Hey everybody, welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks, where we fight depression with the power of music. I'm your handicapped host, James Cox. And today's guest is international recognized singer-songwriter, dulcimer innovator, author and speaker whose career has spanned more than five decades. Kevin Roth began performing professionally as a teenager and quickly became one of the most influential voices in modern mountain dulcimer music, recording more than 60 albums and sharing stages with legends like Pete Seeger and Odetta. I hope to God I pronounced it right. Many listeners may also recognize his voice from the same song and beloved show PBS series Shining Time Station. Kevin, welcome to the show, brother. How are you today?
I'm good. Nice to be with you, James.
Good. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's awesome to have you on, because when I found your Podmatch, we found each other on Podmatch, you know, and I've heard of the dulcimer, but I never like really got into it, you know, so I'm very excited to learn more about it, you know, because something you do is dulcimer meditation. Did I say it right?
Well, dulcimer music traditionally is a traditional folk instrument, and I developed something called dulcimer meditation.
Okay. Right. Okay, so could you go into detail about what that is and how it looks? Because I know meditation is like music is the absolute form of meditation, you know. And I know often music can heal the body, the soul, but the dulcimer brings it more profound, and correct?
Yeah, it's a very gentle sounding instrument. And I teach it along with spirituality. So the way it sounds is just like a cross between a harp and a guitar. And it's played very slowly. And slowly enough so that you're able to close your eyes and tune in and ask yourself what you need to know. What is the universe telling you to know?
Right. Yeah. And I guess that opens up the... something inside you that makes you more calm than anything else before.
Yeah, it makes you more reflective.
Yeah, okay. But you didn't start out playing the dulcimer. You started out playing the piano, correct?
Yeah, I started to play piano when I was about 4 or 5, and I saw the dulcimer when I was 13. So I was raised really listening to folk music like Peter, Paul, and Mary, and yeah. Joni Mitchell. And then I just happened to see a dulcimer played and fell in love with it. But I played the piano by ear.
Right. Yeah. I keep hearing that the piano is the best instrument to start out playing, because all things take from the piano. You know, is that true for you?
Well, for me it was, because we had one.
But yeah.
People learn... Sometimes their first instrument is guitar, other times it's dulcimer, sometimes it's flute. Really kind of, it's whatever floats your boat that you're interested in.
Nice. Do you remember the first time music felt magical to you, or like the first time you actually heard musical notes being played?
Well, in elementary school, you know, they had these assembly programs, and we used to sing, you know, something, good morning to you, you know, little elementary school things. Yeah. But the first time that I thought that music was magical was listening to Peter, Paul, and Mary's first album, because I thought they were so great, and I was so attracted to Mary.
Right.
She was so pretty, you know, and... then as I got older, I heard more things that became magical, pretty
right.
much.
Yeah, it's always great to remember your first musical notes, you know, because I bet after you heard that music was your whole career since then, right? I mean, because as little kids, we always change our careers from, you know, race car driver to this or that to park ranger or something, right?
Well, I think people who were born artistic kind of have that in their gene, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it's a curious life because most artists are deep thinkers. And I wondered when I was a small kid, how do I know to play the piano if no one's ever taught me? I would just kind of find the notes myself. And it seemed kind of mystical to me. So, you know, and music was something I was really good at, where everything else I didn't seem to be that good at. So I was supported by positive reinforcement and, that's just how I was born, musical. That's just the way it worked out, which is a good thing.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, were you born from a musical family? Did your dad or mom ever know?
No one was musical. My father was artistic.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Not musical.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So I guess you got that gene from another.
I don't know what ancestor up another different planet, but so definitely not my family. No one I know in my family is musical. Strangely enough, my father painted, and he was he worked with designing plants.
Yeah,
so he was very encouraging throughout my entire life musically.
Yeah. I read that you developed a chord melody style for the dulcimer. Can you explain to us how do I actually invent something in the first place, and how to make that easy for other people to pick up and learn on your own too?
Well, I was really lucky that when I first saw dulcimer played, I found one a couple weeks later, and in a bookstore. And I bought it, and the girl who I saw play the dulcimer showed me one or two things, but not much. And so, because I played the piano by ear, I just assumed that I could do whatever I wanted with the dulcimer, so I wasn't in any kind of box musically. But most dulcimer people would buy an instruction book or a record to show you how to play, and there was a system. You know, you do this and then you do that, like anything. But I didn't have a system. So after 2 years of playing, when I went to look for a record contract, because I decided that I was worthy of one, I don't know where the audacity came from, but Folkway Records, one of the largest folk music labels in the world, who had Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie and many, many other people, and had some dulcimer players that I was unaware of at the time, signed me because my style was so innovative, so different. No one had done anything like that on the dulcimer. But the only reason that I stood out and was considered, you know, sort of a major creative force in the world of dulcimer is because I didn't know that there was a way to do it. So I invented my own way. It was just really that simple.
Did I read this right? That you became a professional musician by the age of 16?
Yeah, my first record came out when I was 16. Yeah.
Many people can't say that, you know.
No, they can't.
So, in that experience, what was that like for you to experience, like being a professional at that level? Where many like artists are not professional at that level yet. What was that like for you?
Well, you know, to make it professionally sort of in the music business, you need not just talent, but you need luck.
Yeah.
And you need fate. So it just so happened that I had all three going for me to some degree or another when I was signed. So when I went to New York to meet Moses Ash, who ran Folkway Records, he told me that if I stuck with it, I would do well. So I recorded my first album, pardon me, in, I think, near Philadelphia. And I remember the day that a box of promotion records came to my house. My first album, and it was in a cardboard box. And I opened it, and there I was on the cover. And you know the smell of vinyl?
Yes. Yeah, I love it.
There was this release sheet with all the albums Folkways had come out with that quarter. And I was right on there with Pete Seeger and all these other people. And I couldn't believe it. It was like, oh my God, I have my first album.
Yeah.
So my first album, the playing was really good on it. The singing, not so much, because I hadn't studied voice or anything. But that record really established me. People got their start on Dulcimer by that record album, because there were only a handful of record albums of Dulcimer players, and every other player was doing traditional folk music.
Yeah.
And I was doing folk music, but I was doing it in a very creative and unusual style. Again, only because no one told me I couldn't.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Is going from back then, do you still find it easier recording songs from analog, or do you prefer nowadays where it's all one button clicks and everything, you know? Because everything is going faster, faster, faster. Was it easier back then or now?
Yeah, I'm not a tech guy, so I have a recording engineer who comes in with his little laptop, and he just seems to do everything on the laptop. I record new songs on my phone.
Yeah, okay.
So that I can remember them.
Yeah.
And there was a time when I had my own recording studio, but those were reel-to-reel tapes. So when things became digital and things like that, I just didn't want to be bothered with it.
Yeah.
And I don't make that many albums these days. Most people don't, because, the industry has changed a lot.
Yeah, it's all about singles now, yeah.
Yeah, and Spotify doesn't pay you anything, and people download things. And so, I come out with an album every couple of years, but I have 65 of them. It's not like I need another one.
Right. Yeah, because I think you're right up there with an artist called Buckethead, because I think he's made like 85 or something. You know,
Pete Seeger's made a lot more, maybe. I don't know.
Right, yeah, that's true. A lot of musicians say that different instruments allow you to express emotionally what another instrument cannot. What did the Dulcimer allow you to express that, like, the guitar or the piano certainly did not do that for you?
Well, the dulcimer is easy to play because you play it on your lap with your hands down like a piano.
Right. Okay.
So it was just easy for me to just kind of do whatever I wanted to on it.
Yeah.
It was sort of a no-brainer.
Right. Okay. Yeah, for you, the dulcimer was easier to play rather than a piano? Or like about the same?
No.
Because they're the same? Sending down.
No, they're both easy.
Okay, well, yeah.
But the piano came first, so I had a sense of harmony, and all I needed to do, because the dulcimer doesn't have all the frets that a guitar has.
Right.
So it's more like the diatonic scale, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, which is how I was playing piano. I wasn't playing a lot of sharps and flats.
Yeah.
So I just sort of transferred one idea to the other.
Yeah, nice. We just mentioned you've released 60 albums in your career. And that's up and on, correct? Or like, was it year after year after year? I mean, like like, how many albums was that per year for you?
Well, I started on Folkways, and I was doing an album or so every year, and I did a dozen of them over a decade.
Right.
And then I recorded a children's album and then started my own label and did many, many records on that.
Yeah.
And then I would do projects for, like, Sony Records or PBS or things like that. And over the last couple of years, I recorded an album for Paul Stuckey of Peter, Paul, and Mary for his label New World, and it was called Reawakening, which is a very interesting record. It was dulcimer and synthesizer, and of course Paul is from Peter, Paul, and Mary, so that was fun. And then I think my best album that I did was back in 2017 or 18 or something. It's called The Deviant Dulcimerist. And then I made some more subsequently after that.
So, going back to your albums over the 60 album catalog, has your songwriting changed from your early days as opposed to, like, what you create today?
Songwriting wise, you know, I'm an older guy now, and I have more depth, and I'm better at it. But interestingly enough, Noel Paul Stuckey, who I was just talking about, loves my writing that I do for Substack. There are little articles and short stories and poems, and so he encouraged me to finally start my own Substack, which is called Kevin Roth Dulcimer. And most all of my writing now isn't songs. They're articles and short stories. And now he's encouraging me to take sort of the best of those stories and put them together with some songs. So we'll see if that project comes to light.
Yeah.
But I find that I'm writing better stories than I'm writing songs, although I just did write a new instrumental. Which two of them, actually. One was a suite, and another one is sort of an African kind of tune.
Yeah, because I was listening to your most recent album called The Inside Job, and I love the first song, which was called, let me see if I can,
Crazy Love?
Crazy Love, yes.
Yeah, that was written about my dog.
Your dog, okay, nice. Yeah, because when I hear that song, I think about being free, you know, the Bahamas and enjoying life, and, you know. And I want to know, it seems like that album was more freeing to you to write it. Am I correct when I say that?
The album itself?
Yes.
Well, the album is sort of like a greatest hits.
Oh, okay.
Without hits.
It has
some poetry on there and some music and things like that. A big variety on that record.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people like that album.
Yeah. I see in 2011 you came out with My Quiet Times, which is a lullaby instrumental, you know, for children, right? So did you always want to write something for kids and children, infants? You know, because they say that each music note is, I forget the term for it, but it puts you into like a easy sleep or something, right?
Well, I got into children's music purely for business reasons, to be honest, because it was a big market and I was doing really well. But my favorite kind of songs to write for kids were lullabies.
Yeah.
In fact, my album Lullabies for Little Dreamers is what got me hired to sing the theme to the PBS TV show Shining Time Station, which is about Thomas the Tank Engine. And once that became a hit, my career really took off.
Yeah. And I guess, well, you just said you got noticed by PBS for albums you did in the past, correct? And that's how the opportunity came about?
Well, the producer of the show had been putting his daughter to bed with my Lullabies for Little Dreamers album every night. And they had hired somebody in New York City to sing the theme, and whoever it was blew it. And they were looking for somebody, and he thought, you know, I really like Kevin's voice, so let me see if I can find him. So he called the record label, and the record label called me, and I met with him in New York, and that's it. That just happened.
And then there's you, yeah, which is awesome, because I think it's very, very, it's very wild how opportunities come about, you know, and you never know what the next opportunity is going to come, you know? You never know.
It's all fate. You know, there was a documentary done on me. You can see it on YouTube called Dulcimer Man. And the first part of it are interviews. And the second part of it, I feature, I think, 8 or 9 different dulcimer builders. And one of the builders was expecting an onslaught of orders because of this, you know, documentary. And he didn't get one. And I told him, I wouldn't expect that you'd get any now, but someday someone may see that video and say, I love the way that guy makes those dulcimers. I need 100 of them for my school system, which is how these things work.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So you never know, you know, where, what, or when, you know. In fact, there's a documentary being made about Folkway Records, the legendary label, and the producer of that just called me and is interviewing me for that. So Folkways was back in the 70s or 80s, so 40, 50, 60 years later, whatever it is, now I'm going to be in a major documentary film that's going to be shown around the world. Yeah. So you know, you just plant seeds, and who knows what happens.
Speaking of fate and opening doors where one can, you performed at the White House. Did I read that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Nice. Was that for any specific? So I grew up with a Reagan to a Trump now. So so which president did you perform for? If you don't mind me
asking. Clinton.
Okay. Back in the 90s.
I would only perform for Democrats, never Republicans.
Oh, right. You were. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But Clinton. And it was Clinton. Something called an Easter egg roll hunt that they have every year outside
Easter,
of the lawn.
Right. Yes.
And I did it. Peter, Paul, and Mary was there. Sherry Lewis, me, a handful of other performers.
Right.
It was on a very cold day in Washington, the weather.
Did you ever have to pause and think, how the hell did I get here? What did I do? I bet that was the greatest feeling you ever had, correct?
Well, you know, my whole life is a mystery to me. I mean, who sees a dulcimer
at
13 or 14 and makes a living doing it?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Plus, I had a close call. I had stage 3 melanoma in 2015. And I was told by several oncologists that I'd be dead within a year and a half.
Ooh, nope. Yeah.
And it never happened. I'm still here.
Yeah.
I'm healthier than ever. I'm 68. So, you know, I look back at things and wonder how anything happens. But, you know, I'm also a life coach. So I teach Dulce meditation along with spirituality and quantum physics.
Right. Yeah.
So all that would have never happened if it hadn't been from melanoma. So, you know, one thing leads to the next.
Yeah. I do respect doctors a lot, but sometimes they just don't know what they're talking about. The doctors told my mom that I would never be able to do anything. You know, I would always be there. But look at me now, right? I'm making a business with this podcast. I'm talking to you. You know, you're such a delight to talk to, you know. And I don't think doctors know everything about everything, you know.
They really don't.
No.
So you have to take every doctor's opinion with a pinch of salt, you know? And, you know, I've done a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
And you're asking some of the best questions. So
Thank
for
you.
someone to say, you know, oh, he's never going to do this, or she's never going to do that, or they have no idea,
No,
you know.
no.
It's more about your determination.
Yes, that's the secret to life. Yeah,
you have to love what you do, and that's why I do life coaching, teaching, is to help bring that out in people.
Yeah. So over the decades of touring, because you've been to a lot of places, man, and one day I'm gonna grow up to be just like you, because you've gone everywhere, right? So over your decades of touring, though, what have audiences taught you about the universal power of music?
Well, I don't know. You know, a lot of people play dulcimer, come to hear me when I was touring.
Right.
And just general conversation. I mean, there wasn't any major conversation that stood out. It's just, you know, you meet people on the road and they connect with your music or they don't. And then, you know, you go back, they come backstage or you're out signing an autograph and then you're off to the next town. So I've made a handful or two of really close friends through my career.
Yeah. Nice. I don't know where to go through from here now. let's see here.
Well, I you know, one area that you started to talk about that was really interesting is how the music business has changed.
Yes, right.
And when everything went digital with Spotify and even YouTube and everything, artists lost revenue.
Right.
Because you could, unless you were touring, you couldn't sell anything. So people download an entire album for free if they spend $10 a month on a subscription. So that comes down to less, you know, there's a joke that says, now that the government's going to stop making pennies, how are the Spotify artists going to get paid, you know?
Right, because they're throwing pennies, yeah.
Right. So it costs money to make a record and the artwork and the time and the effort, and artists just aren't getting paid.
Right.
And art in general, I think throughout time, has been terribly underfunded but overappreciated. Everyone wants music and they want art, but if they can get it for free, they don't really want to pay for it.
All right.
So then if you want to go see an artist, like a big name artist, tickets are like 100, 152. It's ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
So the nice thing about folk music is that normally you don't pay that kind of fee to see somebody. So that I'm giving a concert coming up pretty soon, and I think tickets, I think they're $25. I don't know.
That's
but,
not much, yeah.
No, it's not much, and it'll be a full house. And,
yeah.
You know, it's folk music is more of a smaller community kind of thing.
I guess more like a niche or whatever. Yeah.
But I think now I'm starting to see more grassroots things come up that says you don't need to be on Spotify or iTunes. We'll distribute your records, but we're going to pay you the $3 or $4 that you should be making.
Right. Yeah.
So, and I believe that when the public finds out that their favorite artist is making more money, they're going to support that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So I'm seeing more and more of that, you know, but it's all about promotion and marketing and things like that. But that to me is in the past for me. I mean, I'm starting my third final round of life here, you know, at 68, you know, writing books and giving occasional concerts.
Occasional, right. Yeah. You don't want to overdo it, right?
Well, right. I don't need to because I live a very simple life and it's very affordable. And I live in San Diego where it's really beautiful. So I like being home with my dog and doing the things I like to do.
Nice. Going back to the universal power of music. Music is always going to be universal language. It's like the ultimate language you can talk to anybody overseas or whatever, you know. There's this one band called The Who, right, which is like a Mongolian band, you know. And they did a cover of a Metallica song. I couldn't understand what they were saying, but I understood what they were saying, if that makes sense to you, you know.
Yeah.
And I find that very enlightening, you know. And I guess that's and that is like essentially the universal power of music. It's universal language, you know. There's no barrier to it, you know.
Music speaks louder than words, and it's very healing.
Yeah, yeah. Just like when words fail, music speaks.
Right.
That's the name of my show. Yeah. That's awesome. It's awesome. Speaking of that, okay, so this name is When Words Fail, Music Speaks, right? In your life, when words have failed you, what music spoke to you more than words can ever, you know, get out?
Well, it's like melodies, but I like things like Gregorian chants. Yeah. And I listen to jazz and classical music. I don't listen to pop or much folk.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because, great question here. I'm trying to get into jazz, okay? So, what would be the very first band artists that I can slowly, you know, get into this jazz?
I really love Rosemary Clooney, Shirley Horn, Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, instrumentalists like Dexter Gordon, John Coltrane, Miles Davis. You know, they all have a variety of sounds.
Yeah. So, I wanted to do like a quick lightning round with you. Is that okay?
Yep.
All right. Cool.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up with that.
Yes, sir. Lightning. Okay. Right, yeah, lightning round. Okay. So, yeah, just first word or first thing that comes to your head. Okay. This is going to be pretty easy for you. First instrument you ever fell in love with.
Well, that would probably be the piano.
Piano. All right. One word that describes the sound of mountain dulcimer.
Sweet.
Sweet. A musician who changed the way you think about music to this day.
A musician that changes the way?
That changed the way you think about music.
Oh, Joni Mitchell.
Coffee, tea, or silence before creating music?
Oh, always coffee, fresh ground beans.
I love coffee, yeah. Because I have this very good Bones coffee, makes excellent flavored coffees.
Yeah.
So, yeah. A song you wish you had written?
From a distance.
I think that's better, right?
Well, yeah, Julie Gold wrote it.
But okay. The most unexpected place you've ever performed?
The Academy of Music in Philadelphia. Okay. That's the best place, yeah.
Nice. What album that every aspiring musician should hear?
Well, I would say Joni Mitchell's Blue.
Perfect. One last question. If the dulcimer could talk, what would it say about Kevin Roth?
If the dulcimer could talk, what would it say about me?
Yeah.
You sure don't know what to do with me when I'm laying on your lap, baby.
There you go. Yes. All right. So we are going to give you a little bit of shout out before we go here. You can go to kevinroth.org and look at his awesome, amazing website. And he does have a store, so everybody can go to the store, buy all this stuff. Buy it, don't download it, don't stream it, buy it, because, you know. And you got a book that's called Between the Notes, correct?
Yeah, it's a story about a little bit about my career, my cancer journey, and what I did to turn my life around.
Okay. Right. And we are also on the fun stuff like YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. Or we're not doing okay.
I don't do TikTok and Instagram. And
I cannot understand TikTok. Facebook and Instagram.
Look for me on Substack.
Okay. Okay.
In fact, you can join for free. You can, as a matter of fact, too.
Nice. Yeah.
So just go to Substack, Kevin Roth Dulcimer, and you'll find a lot of really fun things. And sometimes, if you become a paid member, I send videos out of new songs.
Ooh.
So nice. You can actually hear me. And I'm thinking of starting a kind of a talk entertainment show on Substack now that they're getting into video, but we'll see.
Nice. Well, I do love you for coming on the show, and I beg you to come back anytime and talk music with me, or just to talk, you know?
I love you for having me.
Thank you so much, sir. Yeah. And with that said, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode today. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.